Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
This show is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Robots Radio presents
The Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, a place where the Elder Scrolls community can come together to discuss the boundaries of our knowledge about the universe of the Elder Scrolls. Hey there, adventurers. This is a very special episode. I have somebody who has been a big influence to me in the community guesting on the show today, and so I hope you enjoy it. Just a little note before we get into the interview. It is a longer episode, so you guys have a lot more coming this week to listen to, which is exciting. At the end of the episode, Arimithius, my guest, surprise, adds in some extra stuff at the end that he wanted to make sure was noted correctly. And you'll see a little extra bit. And then after that, we'll get to all the thank yous and the reviews and the ratings and all that kind of stuff that, like we normally do. So without further ado, my interview with Arimithius.
This is where you get off. Come with me.
Welcome, adventurers, to another episode of the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Robots, or Tom. I guess Tom or Robots. I always say it the other way around, but for some reason I changed it this time. Surprise! this week I have a special guest, somebody I've been wanting to talk to for a while now, and somebody who's been giving me a lot of really interesting and useful feedback on my show. I have the host of the Written in Uncertainty podcast, and also YouTube videos, and also contributor to a bunch of other shows and other content all over the place, and also generally considered to be the college professor of the Elder Scrolls lore universe, Arimithius. Arimithius, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Robots. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I seem to have got that college professor postgrad reputation quite rapidly, which is frankly terrifying. I wouldn't say I'm anything like that, but I do try.
Well, I think it has to do with the way you break down the information and the way that you pull in multiple sources. So something we have in common is an interest in philosophy and religion and history and all of these kinds of this background. Because I've mentioned on my show that I have a degree in philosophy and religion. I didn't do a postgrad anything in any of that stuff, but I've got undergrad credentials. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, my favorite professors did something very similar. They would, you know, there was always this answer of when a big question would come up, they'd go, well, if you look at it from this way, according to these sources, this, but this other source says this. So maybe not, you know, nothing is ever black and white.
So, no, absolutely.
There's a lot of you do a lot of that with your stuff. So for anybody who's not aware of who you are, for people who've jumped into my show because they're kind of more on the introductory end of the lore stuff, why don't you go ahead and give them a little bit of a background about yourself and let them know who you are and what you do?
Sure. I've been playing The Elder Scrolls since about 2002, 2003. I think it was when a classmate of mine who was allowed a laptop in lessons for some reason started playing Morrowind at the back of the religious studies class that we were part of. And I just thought, he's mucking around with someone who basically looks like he can do what the hell you like with your character and make them dress in really weird ways. That looks like a really cool game, and kind of picked it up from there. I only actually really got into the lore as such from about 2007, which was my undergrad. And I just kind of taken it from there and just getting sucked into the community as it was. And I started let's start off with how I started to kind of plunge into things a bit. I kind of got on board with the tail end of the official Bethesda forums before that kind of folded in about 2014 or so. I spent several years clinging on to the tail end of some US-based discussions there, which is kind of where I cut my teeth on the Elder Scrolls lore, so to speak. And then relatively recently, I've started to do some moderating stuff on the Elder Scrolls Wiki. I try and keep things vaguely in line in the discussions on there. And also got invited to be part of the Selectives Lorecast, which is kind of what got me into doing Written in Uncertainty. I kind of wanted more of a content like the Selectives. Written in Uncertainty stuff, I also started that thinking there's a bunch of people who are coming into the Elder Scrolls lore on a relatively basic level, and there's a bunch of people that are serving them on a basic level, and there's the Selectives Lorecast, which trots out terms like enantiomorph in every other word and kind of takes it as read that you know what you're talking about. And I was also seeing in some of the discussions that were kind of going on, people were picking up on ideas, kind of asking, like, what is Chim and all this stuff? Mm-hmm. And people would get explanations that were about three lines long. And so people would get hold of what several of the concepts in the lore were and not really understand why. So I kind of started Written in Uncertainty, firstly, because I wanted more level of content that I could engage with and didn't find too much of it out there. And also to provide a platform for people who are thinking that they've heard some of these bizarre things that don't really make a lot of sense in the Elder Scrolls lore, the kind of the weird and wacky stuff, and is wondering where that comes from, what kind of things in the text that we have can come to such weird conclusions, like, is the Elder Scrolls world really a dream? How does that happen? And where does that come from? And so that's why I started Written in Uncertainty.
Yeah, that's a very interesting path. You know, as you talk about this, it kind of brings some things to mind. I feel like the Elder Scrolls universe works almost on three different levels, three different layers. So you have like the very introductory layer, which is, hey, I like magic and swords. You know, like I like these games. You run around, you fight monsters, and yay, I'm a powerful hero, right? That's kind of the very top layer. And then the layer underneath that is kind of where a lot of people get to and then either proceed to dig deeper or just kind of glance off of it. And that's the, you know, like, who are the Aedra? Who are the Daedra? Who are these other things? What is really going on in the history of this place? Why are there all these races? That kind of level. And then once you are adequately into that, you start to kind of dig into that third layer, which hits some of these more complex themes, deeper words. You start to really understand the complexity and the multiple versions of historical stories and reasons for things and words like Chim and, you know, the nature of a tower and you talk a lot about the tower being a spoke on a wheel, but also being an eye, which represents the nature of basically the universe, which is, you know, all of these different things. And you get to like the really heady stuff. And that's kind of the third layer down. And the transition between any of those layers is a little bit difficult to make on your own.
Yeah.
Because you have to, it goes like the first layer goes from like a base level of gameplay. I'm just playing the games to, okay, now I'm actually going to pay attention to the story and read some of the books and listen to the characters talk, you know, and then, okay, there is something else going on here. And then the next layer down is even more difficult because it's rare that you would spend the time to read two or three books to realize that they're all talking in similar metaphorical ways about Chim or the nature of the towers and that kind of stuff. And that part is even harder to dig out and really understand without any other, you know, conversation or help around it.
Yeah, which is, again, it's kind of how the discussions went. I think it was possibly to do with the time that I was kind of engaging with the community and that sort of thing, because you'll hear people talk about Chim and say things like the Amaranth and that sort of thing, but there's very little about that in the actual games themselves. There's quite a bit of baggage in the community in some cases around them as well. So kind of disentangling what those kind of things are. They're brilliant ideas. They're lovely ideas that add a huge amount of depth to the Elder Scrolls, as far as I'm concerned, because you've got all this conflicting information and the stuff that is so tangential and can kind of take you on journeys that you don't really think you're going to get to just looking at the backstory of a fantasy game. But it is also something that you can entirely sail past at the same time, which is great.
Oh yeah, you could totally not even notice that it's there if somebody doesn't bring it to your attention and say, hey, this thing in the game you played, it relates to this deeper concept, just like this other thing in this other game. And you go, oh, okay, yeah, there is similarity there. You know, having the what's it called? The three different individuals. What's that called? The enantiomorph. That's right. So having the enantiomorph be a thing that happens time and time and time again in the games, and then you start to go, oh, okay, this is a pattern. There is something deeper here. Or starting out as the prisoner. Like, that's not just a convenient way to start a game. There's actually deeper meaning to that.
Yeah, which is actually one of the things that I've loved about Elder Scrolls Online, to be honest. They've got quite a bit of this fantastic in-depth stuff that is my focus into the Elder Scrolls Online in various ways and driving the plot and pulling from some really, really old, obscure stuff as well that I think is absolutely brilliant. Like, you know, for ESO Somerset, the Crystal Tower being in multiple dimensions all at once.
Right, yes. I played through that recently. Yeah.
Yeah. That's originally a line from Arena that was put in to describe what the Crystal Tower was, that it said that it's present in all dimensions or in all times and something like that. That's originally going right back to the Elder Scrolls 1. Mm-hmm. So Elder Scrolls Online has done a fantastic job of kind of tying everything together. I mean, it's kind of had to, really, in some senses, because it's happening chronologically before the other games. But as a latest installment and a latest chapter for the lore, as far as we're concerned, it's doing an absolutely fantastic job. And I think it's bringing in different types of player as well. That's kind of one thing that I've noticed in how the communities have changed. Given that I've been involved for quite a while, not as long as some. I mean, there was some people like Lady Nerevar and those kind of pillars of the community who have been around since the late 90s in this franchise. But I've kind of seen enough players come and go and the fan base evolve. And the ESO evolution of it, so to speak, and the kind of people that are coming in and asking those types of lore questions, it's just absolutely fascinating to watch that work as well from my perspective, which is another reason for kind of staying involved with the community. I mean, I'm not an anthropologist by trade at all, but I just absolutely love watching what's going on with this digital community in all of its various forms.
Yeah, I'm sure it's hit a much larger audience, especially, I mean, you get the success of something like Skyrim and that hits a larger audience, but then you get like an MMO, and now you're talking millions of people who are regularly playing all the time, who are saying the same content over and over and over again. And sometimes you just have to have something in front of your face enough times for you to notice that it's there. And then you start to go, oh, there's more here.
Yeah.
So that's, that whole side of it is very interesting too. Now, to side note to any of my listeners who have probably glazed over at some of the words that have been dropped, go listen to Written in Uncertainty. Go look up, there's individual episodes that are about each of these topics. You can start right at the beginning and kind of go through the list of that stuff. You'll have enough. I have a feeling that although some of this stuff seems a little bit obscure, you do such a good job on your show. And if you have any amount of experience in these games and you've listened to my show, even for the little bit that I've been doing it, you probably have enough foundation to still find that stuff interesting and to kind of hold on to the concepts until they begin to make even more and more sense as you experience more of the games and dig deeper in the lore. So I wouldn't shy away from that if I was somebody who's kind of newer. I think give it a try and see what you think.
But although I would say one warning, if you are fussed about spoilers, I'm not particularly. Any and all information will be sucked in and recontextualized to whatever point. So I may drop spoilers. So if you're particularly concerned about that, then I'd say be careful on what topics you choose and how they link and that sort of thing. Just because I may well spoil something. I think the most spoilery I get is in regards to things like Oblivion and possibly some of ESO, but not too much. So it's not a huge concern, but it is there.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you guys know me. I in general, if you're worried about spoilers, you're probably not listening to a podcast. but yeah, I have a feeling when Elsewhere drops that I'll probably not, even if things come up in episodes that relate very directly to things in that story, I probably will shy away from that for at least a little bit in order to give people the chance to play through them, you know? So,
fair enough.
So one of the other things that I think is really cool about what you do in your background is relating other philosophies and things from the real world into the themes and things that get discussed about the Elder Scrolls online. For example, I think you just did an episode on the monomyth, which I listened to. You've been doing these like dual episodes between YouTube and on the podcast, which I think is a great idea to kind of put them both places. And in that, you talk about words just fall out of my brain today. old Greek philosophy, Stoicism. No, not Stoicism. Yeah. Did you bring up Stoicism?
I haven't, but I know some who have.
Not Stoicism. You bring up, what's another one of those ones?
I'm not sure. I've not touched on the Greeks for a while. You've got me thinking now. I want to say the stuff I keep on coming back to is transcendental idealism, but that's because it fits far too nicely, and that's not ancient Greek. No. Oh well.
Crap. It'll as soon as we're done talking, it'll just jump in my head and be like, that was it. But regardless of regardless of which one, is there transcendental idealism? Is there certain philosophies that you find relate more interestingly? Do you think that maybe those philosophies are specifically intentionally being pulled from the real world into this? Or do you think maybe they've just kind of leaked in?
There are some that are very intentionally pulled in. I can only really speak to some of the stuff from Michael Kirkbride, really, because he's been one of the more open developers, or ex-developers, as is now, about where he's pulling his influences from. Some of the kind of absolutely crazy, some of the apparently absolutely crazy stuff like Chim and the 36 Lessons of Vivek and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. pull very directly from the religious practice, I'm not sure whether you'd call it a religion at this point, of Thelema, which is part of the Western esoteric tradition. So ceremonial magic, that sort of stuff, that relates quite directly to some of the stuff that's in the 36 Lessons and some of the concepts around mastery and that sort of thing. In terms of religions, I would go for Hinduism above most of the others, simply because you've got some of the concepts like, is the whole world of the Elder Scrolls a dream? That's a question that keeps on coming up. It's kind of the start of what I consider my metaphysical lore side of things. The idea that the world is a dream of Brahman is a huge key point of Hindu religion. And so that angle plays in, and there are various other thematic bits and pieces that kind of reiterate throughout Hinduism. Like if you look at, say, the warrior, the thief, the mage, and the enantiomorph, mm-hmm. and particularly the tribunal, you've got the threefold nature of Brahmin as a kind of creator, sustainer, destroyer in Brahma, Vishnu, and Kali, I think are the three. Or not Kali, Shiva.
Yeah, I think that has to actually pronounce Siwa.
Yeah. Possibly, I will butcher it, like pronunciations.
It's one of those. A lot of games will actually pull from these other mythologies and religions and things for names for their characters. So, like, I know for sure that you can summon Shiva in Final Fantasy games. And I remember, you know, playing Final Fantasy and then going and studying religion deeper, and then seeing that name show up in, you know, Hindu religions. And then my professors explained it's actually pronounced Siwa. I was like, oh. Completely recontextualizes the way I feel when I see that word written.
It's funny how those differences play out. Like, well, just to go totally left field, Julius Caesar was not Vinny Vidi Vici, it was Winny Widi Wiki.
right,
just as how they would pronounce classical Latin, but that's a whole other track.
Yeah. But, and that feels so much funnier.
Exactly.
Elmer Fuddish almost.
Yeah, but that's the thing with the Elder Scrolls and the way it kind of pulls from these kind of traditions, it feels that much more interwoven in how they think about it. It's a cosmology that's kind of evolved all at once between the Elder Scrolls Adventures, Redguard, and Daggerfall, and around that sort of era that kind of sprung mostly into being from that point and kind of carried on. But there's kind of enough loose threads that they're kind of adding stuff. And and the bits and pieces that they are adding from these different traditions feel that much more integrated. Like it's not just names and aesthetic references and bits of hearkening back. It's aping these things in a much deeper, much more thematic level, which I don't really see that much in other games. You have games that do have their own depth. I mean, Dragon Age is one of the big comparators for me in terms of the kind of depth of the world.
Right. The complexity of the races and how everything interrelates. And
yeah. But you can kind of see how that stuff is kind of pulled together and the roughly how the influences go. But any kind of nods and influences are a bit more surface level than it is in The Elder Scrolls. There's always more layers within TES that is what kind of keeps me coming back to it. And there's always other perspectives as well. So as much as you say that I've been kind of reestablished myself as the professor, so to speak, I am one voice among many, and in particular the Selectives Lorecast, I am fantastically privileged to take part in that, but I know the least of all of them. You've got people who know different things, will focus on different areas, and they all will have opinions, and it's just fantastic to keep on learning about how people think and what people think, just as much as it is looking at the lore of the games itself.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just so much there, you know, and it makes sense. And if you've been digging into this for longer, then you're going to have a little bit more of a toehold, and being part of those early conversations in the forums and those kinds of things, it all adds up over time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's really neat. Oh, I wanted to ask you, is there, you go by Eremithius, is there a reason for the name?
It was the name of a character that I came up with for some 40k fan fiction that I wrote when I was about 15, I think. Which I then submitted as GCSE English coursework and got me full marks. As far as I'm aware, it's not something that's derivative of anywhere else. It's just some syllables I slammed together that sounded vaguely like the name of an Inquisitor. but I've not found, I think I've found maybe one instance in the internet of someone else using it or on one particular community. But apart from that, I've not seen anything about what it could mean or anything else. A lot of the other names that I used to use online, I either cribbed directly from somewhere else or thought, that's a unique name, I'm going to use that. And then, it's actually from here, and right, it means this. And it's, Eremithius, yep, as far as I know, doesn't come from anywhere apart from me.
Yeah, whenever I read your name, I always think it sounds kind of like a high elf. like you're some high elf walking around in ESO who's like... You know,
possibly
like, coming over, you've got questions about the lore, I'll tell you something, you know, like however they talk in the game. It's just kept that picture in my head. The other thing that you mentioned about Eremithius is it being as unique as possible, and there's this kind of underlying need in myself to be it's not so much unique as novel, I think would be the more appropriate word to, you know, like you coming up with a name that isn't already overused or already have other meaning or things like that. This feeling of like, if I'm going to be doing something, if I'm going to create something, even if I'm going to say something, it should be novel. There should be a reason to do it and bring it into existence. And this is, I don't know, maybe this is like weird psychology stuff on me, but this feeling of like, there's so much out there that just replicates what other people do. And there's so much about having conversations with so many other people where once you really get to know them, you can kind of predict what they're going to say.
Yeah.
Because we all have these like habits and these functions that we just kind of go through because we're only so complex. So to actually take the time to put something together and make it, it really should be novel in some way. Otherwise, what are you doing?
No, absolutely. It's keeping it novel is the challenge for me, because one of the things that I've noticed in producing the content is quite a bit of the time I'll refer back to the same thinkers and the same sort of ideas, which in one sense, it's kind of inevitable because that's where the influence came from, and I can show you how that's where the influence came from and that sort of thing. So to an extent, you will repeat yourself. But finding different lenses to look at it, to look at things, is something that I try to keep on doing, and different ways of thinking about it. As much as the primary point for Written in Uncertainty, at least, is to explain things and to say, well, this comes from here, and this is what, well, it's more about this is what some people think, this is what others right. think, this is right. what a third group of people think, and go into the reasons as to why for each is kind of what I try to do. One of the things that I found lately is that I'm kind of going around hunting for all the tinfoil hat theories to try and cram into the podcast and think, well, how can I talk about how Tiber Septim was actually a potato and that sort of stuff?
I can't wait to hear that one.
I'll do what I can. I mean, the bizarrest one I found so far is that Trinimac was actually Boethia, or Boethia is actually Trinimac. There was one theory that circulated around 2006 that was trying to say that the Dwemer turned into the orcs, and there was a fair amount of crossover for that, and something that if you squinted about right, it kind of made sense.
Right.
But that's kind of the wildest ones that's actually held up, as far as I'm concerned. Then you get the other ones that are things like Merun's Dagon is Magnus, which has a bit more to it, and some other bits and pieces as well. So I try to bring in those perspectives as well, partly because they're fun, and also because I don't just want it to be presenting my opinions as such. I want to try and dig into, well, is this true? Is this not? As far as we can within the Elder Scrolls. I mean, the truth in the Elder Scrolls is something that's ephemeral and we probably can't get to in most situations. So that's quite a bit of the time that's by design, particularly in Morrowind, which is a little frustrating sometimes, but it's also interesting finding out where what all the different conclusions are, like the Battle of Red Mountain, which I really should do an episode on soon. I know that how that was designed from, I think, Gary Noonan's perspective, don't quote me on that, but I think that's where it came from.
Well, you're only being recorded and put out on the internet, so.
I'm only just recorded for posterity. The internet's forever. It's nothing to worry about. One of the explicit design perspectives when they were thinking about the Battle of Red Mountain was that people can have the same sort of touch points, but between that, the details don't matter. So in some ways, you can't find answers in for some things, because it's designed that way. In some, you can, and there's some kind of underlying goal in how it's being put forward. I think that's possibly come in a bit more in the later games, but it's still interesting trying to tease all those different perspectives out and present all of the different perspectives.
Yeah. So do you, there's a lot going on. I mean, the gray maybe is part of a big part of all of this, right? And then, in fact, that you use it in the tagline of your show.
Absolutely.
But I feel like that resonates with me a lot, because whereas most people want some sort of black and white explanation about the world, they want to feel secure and on some sort of foundation. And so they will often do mental gymnastics in order to hold on to some sort of belief more firmly than it has actually been proven to them, in order to feel like they're standing on some sort of firm foundation, even if they're not. Even if deep down inside they're going, well, I'm afraid of it being not this firm, so I'm just going to believe that it is. That happens a lot with human nature, in my opinion.
Yep.
And what I've come to learn to enjoy is the gray maybe, the balancing of multiple perspectives and admitting the I don't know, the well, it might be like this and it might be like this, but ultimately I don't have enough information to draw a conclusion, but I can tell you which one seems to have more evidence.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with not having a conclusion right now. That's totally fine. You know?
No, that's absolutely how you need to think about it. It's not true or false. It's weak versus defensible.
Right.
It's just kind of gathering together your body of evidence and saying, well, if X, then Y, but if A, then B. And
Right. And both of them are credible, and both of them could be different. And I may be more emotionally invested in one of them than the other, but that doesn't mean it's more likely to be true.
Yeah.
It's just more it's just the thing I'm rooting for, you know? That's about it.
No, absolutely. And that's kind of where I think we're possibly getting to with parts of the fandom, if I'm honest. If you look at how people say, well, zero summing is this, and or well, Chim is this, or Todd Howard is the Godhead, and and people will attach to those ideas, having not really looked at where they've come from, just heard stuff them, and not really gone to where those ideas came from, which is again why I started Written in Uncertainty, really, to kind of show where all that stuff comes from, and so that people can find things and make up their own minds. It's one of the lines I repeat ad nauseum is that I will post all my references in an article somewhere. So you can go and dig around, find out stuff for yourself, come to your own conclusions. And because that's what you need to do with a lot of the Elder Scrolls, because the truth isn't there and in black and white ever. And I'm possibly a bit on the extreme side in terms of how I think about things like truth and canon, so to speak. Even if you just say you can definitely take in what's in the games and how you think about stuff, then you won't come up with firm answers necessarily at all, unless you subscribe to canon events, which is something which I think is a bad idea in the Elder Scrolls entirely. But the canon wars are a big nasty thing that happened, and I don't really want to rehash an awful lot of them.
Can you, for people who may not be familiar with that, can you give them at least some sort of idea of what that is?
Okay. It was basically a series of events that happened. Well, it's kind of an ongoing on again, off again thing that happened more or less since Morrowind, but kind of came to a head around the time that Skyrim was released and the years that followed that, because the developers in the early days, the developers were posting on the forums. They were taking on character roles. If you look at the right archives, you can find people posting as Karlovic Townway or as Shia Gorath in the forums, and those are developers posting that. So for one thing, if a developer posts on a forum as a character in the franchise they run, is that canon? That's one question that's been argued about for ages. And then you get things like Michael Kirkbride, who he basically posted a bunch of stuff on the forums around between 2010 and 2014 was about his active period, or most active period. And that's where we first got the notion of the towers from a PC posted in 2004. It's also where you get the first mention of Blademaster Geoffrey and various other characters that turned up in Arena in one of these forum posts. Or not in Arena, sorry, in Oblivion. And that's the first place you hear of them in those kind of settings. So are they canon? Are they not? How are you applying these labels? And there was huge arguments in the community about whether basically the 101 explainer of what the towers are that he'd posted was canon or wasn't, because it isn't in the games anywhere. The stuff that gets referenced in the games is only kind of half referenced. Like part of Heimskir's speech in Whiterun is taken from a text that he wrote to try and justify why Cyrodiil wasn't a jungle in Oblivion. Does that mean that the whole thing is canon? Does it not? It's caused quite a bit of squabbling over the years for the Elder Scrolls fandom. From my perspective, because you can't get to the truth necessarily, I don't really see a point in adhering to a strict canon as such. You can take information and see, well, does it fit with what we already know? Does it not? And apply it that way. And you could potentially say, well, if it's got copyright Bethesda, it's canon, regardless of what the truth of the actual events. If there's a book in a game or posted online or whatever, that's canon. That's understandable. But I think from a perspective of looking at some of the stuff that I look at least, and stuff that quite a bit of the fandom has been looking at for a good while now, in the kind of the more mystical, metaphysical side of things, there's so little out there that we've kind of clung to whatever sources we can that could possibly be the truth. So
you got to take what you get.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that probably won't be elaborated on too much in the games, simply for making it easy for people to understand in the games without having to have read all of the posts that went before and that sort of thing. So I think I generally look at the perspective of, well, this is the source. This is where it comes from. If this is true, then this is the way the Elder Scrolls world works. If not, then it probably works another way. A lot of the time, that's basically saying, then we don't know, which, to be honest, I personally find that a little boring, but because we don't have any answers, but it's a valid perspective.
Yeah, you know, I think whenever you look at this stuff, you have to look at it from the perspective of not only is this a world that's being creative, but it's also a video game. It's also novels. It is a creation that is continuing to be created and refined over time. And any good author, or I would urge people to think about a time when they ran a Dungeons and Dragons campaign or something like that. You have, when you start out that campaign, you have a certain sense of generally where you think things will go and what the background is. But as the story is created, you tend to update that and you come up with better, more interesting ideas, or you start to realize that, oh, there's a connection here that I didn't see before. That might mean this other thing. Oh, that's really cool. You know, it continues to solidify over time. So for somebody like Michael Kurtbride, or, you know, the teams behind these games, to have that kind of content back behind the scenes to draw from, but it doesn't actually it's not fully formed until it really does show up in a game or really does show up in a book. That makes a lot of sense, that like until it's birthed into the actual world of the thing you're creating, it is this, it's potential. It's an idea, but it's still waiting to be birthed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely one of the things that he's said, and he's actually explicitly said that in one or two of his texts on Nordic cosmology. That's, I think it was Shore Son of Shore or World Eating 101, something like that, where it was just, well, this might not be true, but if it was, then what about this?
Mm-hmm. Because that's part of the fun of making a world is saying, like, okay, this is what I've done so far. These are some ideas. How do they line up? And, you know, are there other things that we can come about? And in fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if a lot of the things that are going to come out in the future aren't informed by the community's conversation.
And oh, no, absolutely.
Had the community not been having a conversation and really poring over all of these little details and drawing connections where previously they weren't intentionally placed, that has probably opened up more for the evolution of the world in ideas coming from, you know, multiple brains rather than just, you know, a small group of brains.
Yes.
It's just going to create something that's even more interesting. And somebody's going to go, oh, that's a really great idea. Why didn't we have that? We need to work that into this thing somewhere. So big news, friends, the Robots Radio Network is now sponsored by Loot Crate. This means that you will get 15% off on your purchase of a crate or a crate subscription at lootcrate.com. Now, all you have to do is click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you to lootcrate.com. And when you purchase something, you can put in the code ROBOTSRADIO, ROBOTSRADIO. And when you do that, you get 15% off your purchase. Now, this is awesome because they have Fallout crates, they have video game crates, they have superheroes, you get t-shirts and figures and art to put on your walls. This is actually where I got the Brotherhood of Steel flag that I have behind me in some of my videos. Very, very cool stuff. I'm super excited about it. And if you have somebody who's already buying you loot crates for your birthdays or whatever, give them the code. They can use it. If you want to use this for somebody else's gifts, or if you just want to get yourself one or two boxes, you can use the code for yourself. Again, just click the link in the show notes and type in the code ROBOTSRADIO, ROBOTSRADIO. You just put that in the box at checkout. Super cool stuff. I hope you guys check it out. And any purchases you make help to support the shows on the network. So whether it's my shows or someone else's shows, click the link in the show notes for your favorite show. Give them some support and get yourself some awesome loot.
Yeah. You know? That's very true. Although, to be thoroughly pedantic about the whole thing, from an intellectual property standpoint, that puts you a little bit on hot water because can't directly lift to quite that extent. But no, it's absolutely the case, I think, that bits of the community stuff has kind of woven their way in. There's one or two examples that where that has happened already. I mean, Icefire Warden's done a bunch of in-character interviews with Lawrence Schick and a few others for ESO, and a few bits from his kind of expansion of some of the islands to the east of Tamriel has kind of made their way into those Loremasters archives, just as dropped in bits and pieces here and there. And how they're talked about. So there's definitely that kind of interplay that goes on. It might not be as direct as it was in the early days, where you would know that the developers were listening and talking and participating in the whole thing, but it definitely still goes on. Oh, and sorry, there is a definite direct influence here that Ted Peterson's actually mentioned. There was an in-character role play in 2004, I think, called The Trial of Vivek. And people on the forums actually decided to put Vivek on trial for murdering Nerevar and the actions of the tribunal. Michael Kirkbride shows up, plays Vivek, and various hijinks happen involving Muatra and Azura and various other things, and I don't really want to spoil it. It's a hell of a read, but there's kind of a few lines in the third edition pocket guide that shipped with Oblivion that if you look at them the right way could quite well be referencing that set of threads. That kind of feedback from the community definitely happens.
Yeah, or even just things that spark ideas that take you another step. But, you know, you may not ever have to relate the thing that sparked the idea. It just kind of moves you in a direction that you wouldn't have gone if the conversation didn't happen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, that stuff's all great. There's so much to this community. There's so much fun stuff to dig into. One of the other things I'm going to recommend to the audience is to check out your website, writteninuncertainty.wordpress.com. And you have a other TES sites and contents page. Where you have, you've got this show on there, you've got a bunch of other shows on there, you've got Imperial Knowledge and Selective's Lorecast, and then the UESP podcast, and just a whole bunch of things, Telmora Press, that are places that people, if they really are interested in diving into this, can go find more content. So,
Oh, and one additional thing to add to that, there's another section on there that's law essays and resources. If you want to find out where some of the stuff that I go to for how my podcasts hang together where they come from, there's been a hell of a lot of thought put into stuff by many people over the years for The Elder Scrolls lore, and some of the longer ones and, dare I say it, better ones, even if I don't agree with them, I'll be posting those up there in the... I think I've called it the kind of the other texts or lore resources, something like that.
Yeah, and, lore resources and lore essays and resources.
Yes, that's the one, and that includes everything from the Hunt the Amaranth threads, which was when Kirkbride teased about the Amaranth's existence, and then there was about 17 months worth of forum threads trying to work out precisely what the Amaranth was and how it connected with everything else before Kirkbride finally revealed what he thought the Amaranth was and what he intended it to be. There's Icefire Warden's 60-page treatise on the prisoner, which has now been expanded to I think over 100 pages now. I need to link the updated version, but that's there. Rotten Deadite and Bucknibus have done a line by line exegesis of the 36 lessons of Vivek. They're about halfway through, and it's been about 2.5 years.
Oh gosh. That's, yeah. You know, I like a lot of the writings, but like the Vivek stuff is just, I don't know. I'm sure you probably, when doing studies in like real world stuff, like there's certain philosophers that, you know, religions or whatever, people's writings that resonate more with you and you go, okay, no, I get this. I can get in this headspace. I can see the world from this perspective. I totally get it. And then there's some that you just bounce off of and you're just like, I don't know. I have no, like, I can't, I cannot get my, like Immanuel Kant for me was one of those people, even though so many philosophers like very much gel with at least being able to understand the way he puts things forward and his categories and all of that stuff. But I remember diving into that in college and being just like, this is all just like a foreign language to me. I cannot get my mind around it. But you throw me something else and I'm like, oh yeah, this is fine. You know, even way more complex, more recent philosophers. And I'm just like, yeah, no, I get it. This makes sense. But yeah, Vivek is like that for me in the Elder Scrolls. I start reading his stuff and maybe because it's so poetic or I don't know. And I'm just like, oh.
you kind of need a place to start with Vivek. Some stuff that you kind of know is there and you have to hunt for. You need a reference point to start with, I think. Or at least that's kind of the help for me when I always got told, this bit is talking about mastery, or this bit is thinking about linking potentially to BDSM and the various things that happen within that community and the social dynamics that work there. And it's, oh, that makes sense now. You need a lens to start to look at the thing, and then you start to hunt stuff down. That, and Thelema is the most blatant one of those. If anyone wants a starting point for the 36 lessons of Vivek, look at some of the basic stuff of Thelema about will and love and a few bits and pieces of phraseology here and there as well that kind of just creep in that are explicit references. And then quite a bit of the 36 lessons will make at least some more sense than they do in a first reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost feel like it's the kind of thing that you could write. Like if I was creating a world like this, it might be really fun someday to just try to have the most absolutely ridiculous conversation with somebody where you just kind of, I don't know, you get drunk or something, and then you just kind of go on and on and on and try to just say the most absolutely ridiculous stuff. And then when you're sober, you go back and you edit it into something that is kind of coherent.
Yep.
And then you go, yep, this means something. It's like,
yeah.
What?
No, that's that, from what I gather, is something close to the process for the sermons, because that got edited a fair bit, from what I understand. I don't know how much, but there was an editing process there, and I also know that's something that the writers in Bethesda kind of do on not on quite such a grand scale, but in other places as well. Like if you read on Oblivion, which has been kicking around since Daggerfall, that's got a mention of Jiggalag. Mm-hmm. And that was just a name thrown into On Oblivion. It's like, oh, we can possibly do something with that someday.
We'll just plant the seed and we'll figure out where it goes later.
Yeah, and that's where the Shivering Isles stuff came from. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's like you're saying with the role-playing stuff. If you read any good role-playing game source book, there will be these little threads that like, well, there's been rumors of this happening, or a party went this way and they disappeared and no one's seen them for months, sort of thing, that's very explicitly in there to allow games masters and storytellers to tell their own stories related to that, give them a jumping off point. And there's definitely instances where that's happened in The Elder Scrolls. I can't point to even half of them, I imagine, or to many of them at all, but they are definitely there and groundwork is being laid, even if there is a relatively solid pathway that's probably there somewhere. Because just to give you another little idea, in The Elder Scrolls Adventures, Redguard, which was published 93-94, I think, the names of every game up to Oblivion was already finalized.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And you can find that. You can find that on a bookshelf in The Elder Scrolls Adventures, Redguard. And they'd finalized that a good time ahead of when they even started thinking about what to actually put in Oblivion, I imagine. But, or maybe they had a very solid idea of how those were going to go.
Yeah, no, that stuff's great. That's so good. So we're getting kind of toward the end of it. I wanted to wrap this up with a little bit of speculation, because, I mean, that's kind of a lot of what we do anyway, about where do you think things are going to go in the future of the series? Like, the next main game, or maybe to relate back to some of the things we discussed, where are you hoping it goes, even if the evidence doesn't show it, you know?
I am going to vaguely fall back on some nuggets that that Kirkbride dropped on a forum here, and was basically talking about it being contra Tolkien, and Tolkien's narratives are about the slow defeat, the decline and fall of the world and the elves,
right,
and all that stuff. And the elves in Tolkien are the ancient magic, the declining other. Whereas I think I remember seeing somewhere that Michael pointed out that they were trying to do a story of elven ascendancy rather than having men being on top, having humans being on top, and these otherworldly things just slowly fading away. Then they were looking to tell a story where elves come out on top,
where magic becomes more potent, where things become more other.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. That fits into one of the theories of the parabolic Kalpa, which Lady Nerevar posted up. Because you look at, say, the first era, round about there, there's talk about what are essentially spaceships going to Aetherius, mm-hmm, and trips trying to be made to Oblivion. You've got the battle spires. You've got all sorts of magical technology that isn't present in the third and fourth era stuff. So you've got that steady decline and fall of technology, and, well, not necessarily of technology, just of the world's capabilities. And then you've got the dragons coming back in The Elder Scrolls V. So I think we are going to start seeing the world become that bit more magical. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're going to see things kind of, you've reached the low point that she tentatively put as the Oblivion Crisis. But then you've got the upswing of more magic coming back into Mundus, and the sign of the dragons returning being a sign of that. And you've also got Kirkbride's possible assertion that the elves will win, which has some really, really interesting notions for me for what Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be. I am frankly dying to see something more of the Thalmor, and quite what they are beyond a Talos is bad, men are stupid kind of perspective.
Right. Yeah. It totally feels like they've been leading up to the next one being very much about the Thalmor. And who are they? What are they actually doing? What is their real mission? Where, you know, how does the world look under their dominion, maybe even?
Yeah, no, that would be interesting. Although my money's on Hammerfell for The Elder Scrolls 6, which it definitely isn't going to be under the Dominion's control directly, if that is the case. But I really want to hear some more about the Dominion's worldview and how that kind of shakes out, if only to confirm my suspicions that it's just Gnosticism writ large. But
that was, you know what, that came back to me a few minutes ago, but I didn't yell it out. Gnosticism, that was the one I was trying to think of. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah. Oh man, there was something else I was saying. Oh, the magic becoming more potent or more common or whatever, however, you know, evolution towards that rather than it going away. Do you think that there's some relation in there to the breaking of the towers that maybe...
Possibly.
Yeah. So this is one of those ideas I've been kicking around. If the point of the towers is kind of secure Mundus, is to kind of keep things stable, then that could mm-hmm. also be seen as a way to keep it separate from the rest of creation and from Aetherius, mm-hmm. the places where the magic comes from, and Oblivion and all those kinds of places. And the more that the towers are weakened or destroyed individually, the more that Mundus returns back to a previous state of a more, I don't know, more chaotic, more magical, more, I don't know, however you wanted to phrase that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not totally sure that's what's going to happen, because the Merethic towers that were built by the elves were built after the world has stabilized. The tower in High Rock, Adamantia, and Red Mountain, those were created while the world was still in flux. And I think it's Before the Ages of Man has a line like, "And with creation finally stabilized, once Lorcan's heart's been torn out and flung away." Mm-hmm. So if the towers are stabilizing the world, holding the world up, then it's those two that are the big ones. And the Morrific towers are not really that important in terms of keeping things stable in that regard. The Morrific towers definitely seem to have some sort of control over their local area. When you look at how Cyrodiil has shifted its climate, depending on who controls the White Gold Tower, maybe. Right. And I think there was something about in ESO about how green sap changed when the Aeolids mucked around with it. There's certainly some ability to control what goes on in the local area with the Morrific Towers. But as far as collapsing the whole world because there aren't any towers anymore, I don't know whether that necessarily holds water because most of the towers weren't around when the world was stabilized to begin with.
What about like, because they do have, it seems to have this effect on a local area. What if there's a sense of like channeling and focusing rather than let's go back to Aetherius. Let's go with the theory that the magic seeps through the holes, through the stars and through the sun and comes down into Tamriel from that. And magic itself is part of the building and the creation, is part of the core bits of things existing at all. It was necessary for it in some level, which we can argue did Lorcan intend for that or whatever. But let's just say that let's just assume that that's the way things are. So if A, then the towers then focus that energy into a more usable thing that can be used to stabilize, sculpt, create. So if the towers are destroyed, then the magical energy then becomes less stable and more less focused in one specific area and more just common in general.
Possibly, yes.
Just an idea. Just an idea to throw out there.
It makes sense given kind of the events that happen after the destruction of towers that we know about. When you look at, say, the end of the Elder Scrolls 3, when Lorcan's heart is freed or destroyed, depending on who you believe, then the Red Year happens shortly afterwards. When the Amulet of Kings is destroyed as part of the Elder Scrolls 4, then you've got the ending of the Septim Dynasty and the event, and the crumbling away of the Empire as a result. And so I definitely think there's something going on there. I don't know whether you could say that it's related to magic necessarily, because the towers specifically, if I remember my Numantia Intercept correctly, are saying that they are there to harvest creature from oblivion. And one of the things they do is channel energy from oblivion from a form that is more potent than magicka to do things. So without the towers there, I'm not sure that creature would be being drawn through and drawn into Mundus.
Mm-hmm. They're like the device that even allows that to happen at all.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I'm not sure, obviously, because we've not really got enough information on that, really, unless you can argue that the stones are potentially a lens for the creation to be focused. And so without that, you've just got the tower pulling creation into the world without a way to focus it.
Yeah, because in a lot of cases, the lens is what gets destroyed, not the stone, not necessarily the tower.
Yes. Yeah, although we have got the phrases about the tower being deactivated because the stone is destroyed. So,
But deactivated might mean for its specific original purpose.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's definitely possible. We don't know enough about it to say one way or the other, but it does seem that shaking up the towers and destroying the stones does do bad things.
this equals bad.
Yeah, you don't want to muck with the towers because you need to know what you're doing. Which, in fair, the last people I think that really knew what they were doing with the towers were the Aeolids. But
yeah. Well, hey, that's part of all the fun of this is just speculating, going, okay, well, what connections
absolutely
can we draw? And if we interpret this a little bit differently this way, what happens?
Yeah.
That's all the fun of this. Awesome. Awesome. So one of the other things that I just wanted to bring up right before we end is you've got Tamriel, then you have the other continents that supposedly are around it.
Yes.
Historically, or in the sense of movement through kalpas, or there's lots of different ways to perceive how those actually function. But we do have places in the history of invasions from Akavir, or settlements from Yakuta, or from Altmari, or wherever. I think that it would be interesting for me, as the series moves forward, to reconnect some of that, for there to be either a better understanding, similar to like in Skyrim, how we got a little bit better understanding of who the Snow Elves are, to get to dive into, you know, like, okay, who are the Yakudans? What are they really like? Who are the Akaviri? What were they really like? Can we find remnants of them? Can we, you know, were there really lizard people, or were they just kind of associated with being lizard-like, you know?
Yeah.
Some of that stuff, which you think there would be remnants of that in something like Elder Scrolls Online, but there really isn't a whole lot there other than, you know, like, oh, this armor set has this name on it and it looks kind of cool.
Yeah, there are bits like this. I think there are some Akaviri ghosts somewhere as well, and the odd piece of ruins and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'd be curious to see how they'd handle that sort of thing as a narrative, because halting an invasion is pretty hard for a single hero to do. But there is a passage somewhere in the 36 lessons that says that there will be, heavily implies that there will be three Akaviri invasions, and we've had two so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's time. It's time.
Yeah, absolutely. We're owed another one.
We got another one. Plus, I think it would be really cool, and this is just like the, this is what I want kind of thing. And I don't know that it makes any sense at all. So don't think too hard about this. But you can always choose races and things, and it's always been roughly the same list of races. A few get left out in the earlier games. But what if you could be a freaking lizard? Or no, we already lizard people. A snake person. You're a snake person? And the more I think about this is because of the novels. I've been reading the novels. I mentioned them the last few episodes. But there's a lot of interaction with Dremora and Daedra, the people of the Daedra, who have this different lifespan, but they're not inherently evil. They're just other. Like, what if you could make a Daedric character? That would be super weird. It'd be really hard to do in the story, because nobody would want to talk to you and everyone would be scared of you. But it would be similar to doing something like, what are they called in Dungeons and Dragons, where you have the people who look like they're half demon or something like that.
The tieflings.
The tieflings, yes. Cool. You could have... something like that. And if the world is changing enough, or there's some sort of major event which is breaking down the boundaries between, say, you know, Oblivion and Tamriel specifically, because that's where everything's focused, right? Then maybe there's, I don't know. That's just me going, man, it'd be really cool to make a Daedra character.
It would be interesting to see how they handled it. I don't think it would be that easy given how the Elder Scrolls work as games. It would be really interesting to just, in a more limited game that had a much more set narrative, and so you weren't having to tweak thousands of dialogue options in quite the same way.
Right.
But
yeah, everyone has to have a welcome traveler, or oh my god,
like, yeah,
get out of here.
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it would be interesting to see how they would do that. And the way the races work in general, I want to see a bit more on, because Notes on Racial Phylogeny has kind of become the Bible for how that works. And there are a few examples which potentially directly contradict that within the characters that we hear about or have seen in games. So it would be interesting to see if they could add some more to it that way, and to kind of explain why these anomalies happen, or how Notes on Racial Phylogeny is wrong in some way, and why, and look into it that way, and potentially build a system of, not exactly make your own race, but build some more racial options into that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be real cool. Cool. Well, this has been a really fun conversation. Thank you for joining me.
I'm glad thank you for having me.
We got this together. We didn't talk about it for a little bit, but finally had a date and we're like, all right, let's do this.
Yes, absolutely. Scheduling finally lined up.
Yeah. So I've already mentioned your stuff a lot, but if somebody wanted to get a hold of you or kind of get more of your stuff, how would they do that?
Sure. I am available on Twitter @Aramithius. There is the Written in Uncertainty website, which has links to the Discord for the podcast as well. I also have writteninuncertaintypodcast@gmail.com, where you can drop me any thing you want to say about the show or requests for things for me to look at, that sort of thing. I've been trying to pull together things for a Q&A episode, but I haven't been getting an awful lot of feedback on that. So I've not quite got enough for an episode yet. So please bombard me with stuff.
I would love so a crazy theories episode coming up.
Oh, that the selectives have already done that, and it's fantastic to hear some of them. They are only on YouTube at the moment.
Yeah,
but
I wish they were audio. It'd be easier to listen.
I am trying to make moves in that direction, but it's a slow process. But yeah, I am also about on, I think at last count, I was on about somewhere between 15 and 17 different Elder Scrolls Discords.
That's a lot.
So I will probably be somewhere. I compared notes with one of the guys on the German TES wiki, and we're on 10, we have 10 servers in common, I think, and our own kind of areas of interest outside of that. So there's an awful lot of bits and pieces out there and way and places to find me.
Yeah. And you're on our Discord too. And we have a content creator. So you're up in there. And because you're whenever you're online, you show up at the top of it. So you're king of the content creators. In our little
no
list.
Hiding.
So, well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it. And we'll have to get together and chat a little bit more sometime in the future, for sure.
Absolutely. I'll look forward to that.
All right. Thanks, Arimathias.
Thank you. And then there's that last niggling little bit that you just couldn't remember on the actual interview itself. I just wanted to attach a little postscript to say that one of the biggest real-world religious influences for how the Elder Scrolls cosmology is set up is Gnosticism. We brought it up in the podcast itself, but didn't really call it out quite as much as I think it deserves to be. The way that Anu has his soul, which is Anuiel, which has a soul, which is Auriel, and that kind of stacked way of creating deities and kind of deriving one from the soul of another and creating soul after soul after soul and eventually arriving at the material world is very, very close to the Gnostic beliefs that were held in the real world, particular kinds of Gnostic Christianity, where the material world was seen as sinful and bad because it was created by something that was several degrees removed from the original creator God. And the world was created, the material world was created by the demiurge, who was a bad person and shouldn't really have been doing what he was. That's very close to the Altmerish view of Lorcan, for your information, and the way that souls are structured and the process of subgradients happens, that of gods becoming lesser gods, becoming mortals through the splitting and fragmentation of their souls, is a very, very Gnostic concept. Okay, and with that, that's definitely the end of it this time. Cheers. Bye.
The skies are marked with numberless sparks, each a fire, and every one a sign.
Come to me with questions. I know our history almost as well as Vignar by now. Except I can remember it.
Yes, yes, you're entirely brilliant. Conquering madness and all that. Blah, 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 blah.
So thank you again to Arimathias for joining me this week. I'm sure we'll get back together again. There's so many other things that we can talk about. And I really do enjoy his perspective and the amount of detail that he puts into every little consideration and is able to pull in such a vast store of knowledge from different sources and bring it all together. So thank you again for joining me, Arimathias. This was so much fun. And this week, I'm going to go into some of the other stuff. I hope you guys got a chance to check out the little extra episode I put out right at the beginning of the weekend with some announcements and things to kind of rehash that a little bit. Our Elder Scrolls Online PC North America Guild is up and all of you are welcome to join as long as you agree to be awesome human beings to each other. That's basically the only prerequisite. That's it. So if you are interested in that, check the show notes for the Discord link. There is a channel in the Discord where you can go and apply. It's pretty obvious. You go into the Elder Scrolls Lorecast section, go down to apply to guild, and type % apply. You'll see it. And if you have any questions, you can always just ask on the Discord. Otherwise, I think we have I don't know what's going on with my voice today. I think we have seven people. We're almost at the 10 limit, so we can have a guild bank and all that stuff. So people keep coming in. So all of you are welcome to join us. And I would love to get some other events going. So if you are interested in helping lead that and create weekly events and things, let me know as well. Send me a note about that. And if you didn't listen to the quick little episode, the other thing I did was I noted Marley, our new tier 3 patron at patreon.com. Thank you again so much. I made a mistake and missed out a few weeks of thanking Marley for being a patron. So I wanted to get that out there again, just in case you guys didn't hear that on the last little quick episode. And one more note before we get to the reviews and wrap up this week's show. I am launching a third show. I know that sounds crazy. How do you have time to do these two things, work a regular job, have family, play video games, and then also now launch a third podcast? This is how I'm doing it. I got inspiration off of an interview I had with my daughter in the car about Fallout this last weekend. That was the extra episode I put out for the Fallout Lorecast. And I recorded it on my phone, and the sound quality definitely wasn't great. I tried to clean it up as best I could. But I've now purchased an extra microphone that I can mount inside the car to hopefully get better audio. And because I spend so much time commuting to work every day, I figured I could use some time while I'm commuting to just talk and share whatever is on my mind. So I'm doing kind of like a personal journal in the car while I'm driving as often as I have anything to say. And it's going to go up on another show, another feed. I'm not going to put it into these feeds because I want to keep these shows as pure as I can, because on the other show, I'm going to talk about, maybe I'll talk about Elder Scrolls stuff, but maybe I'll talk about movies or other video games or philosophy or life in general, or the stupid thing somebody did at work today. I don't know. I'm just going to come up with things to talk about. So I've gotten a little bit of feedback from you guys saying that you are interested in some of the extra little nuggets of stuff I put in these episodes. So I thought I'd give you an extra perspective into my life and some of the things that go on in this crazy head of mine. So that will be on Robots Thoughts. And it's another Robots Radio podcast. I should have a link up on the website, but it should be about anywhere you can get podcasts within just a week or so. And hopefully I'll have the first episode or two up, and who knows, maybe they'll be short episodes. Maybe they'll be long episodes. I haven't even made one yet, so I don't know, but that will be Robots Thoughts. And you can download that wherever podcasts are. So please check that out. Hopefully I'll have one up sooner than later. And now to the reviews. We've got two new 5-star reviews this week. The first one is from Eris921 from the United States, and they said, I don't know why I said it that way, great source of information. Thanks for this podcast. It is so helpful in learning about different aspects of the Elder Scrolls lore. I'm looking forward to hearing more and more. You make the content fun and easier to digest. Well, thank you. That's the goal, and I'm glad I'm meeting that goal for you, and I really do appreciate the time it took you to write down those words and leave a review. So I very, very much appreciate that. Then we have, and this is probably the best name I've ever seen because it's a bunch of little emojis. It looks like angel, devil, girl, boy, sad dog, I don't know, happy, so happy it's crying dog, regular dog, another angel, another dog, a boy, an old person, and a dog. That's their name from the United States. And they write, great source for lore. I don't have time to read every book in Skyrim, but I do have time to listen to this podcast to get my lore fix. I love the storytelling and the episodes. Since I'm relatively new to the Elder Scrolls universe, I like getting context from games in the series other than Skyrim. Keep up the great work. Awesome. Well, that's why the show is here, and I'm glad, I cannot pronounce your name, that you have enjoyed it so much. I'm just going to call you Emoji. Thank you, Emoji, for that review. All right, everybody, that's it for this week's show. Be ready next week. I will probably be back to another episode, but I've got at least two more interviews scheduled with some very popular Twitch streamers, and I can't wait to get to them. I will be recording them this week, most likely, and I'm not going to drop any names yet, but I'm so excited to have them on, and hopefully those will be interesting and fun episodes as well. I mean, I can't imagine them not be. In fact, one of them I'm probably going to have to use a mature rating on, so that'll be fun. All right, guys, I'll let you go, and until next time, if you have any thoughts about what might be coming in Elder Scrolls 6, shoot me a note. Let me know. I want to hear the speculation as crazy as it possibly can be, because I've got some crazy thoughts myself. All right, guys, I'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye. Thanks for listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. All sounds and music are owned by Bethesda Softworks or ZeniMax Studios, and no copyright infringement is intended. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the show, please reach out to us at elderscrollslorecast@gmail.com or on Twitter at @ESOLorecast. If you'd like to help support the show, check out the rewards you can get at patreon.com/elderscrollslorecast. I really appreciate you listening, and I'd love to hear from you soon.
Have you ever wondered how deep the Elder Scrolls lore rabbit hole goes? Have you got a grasp of the basics and want to find out more about the universe? Written in Uncertainty is here to help you. We'll be mixing in philosophy, theology, and whatever other theory is useful with Elder Scrolls texts to untangle some of the biggest questions in the series, like what are Dragonbreaks, how does Chim work, where did the Dwemer go, and more. Check us out at writteninuncertainty.com or find Written in Uncertainty on any podcatcher. Thanks for listening, and catch you later in the grey maybe of Tamriel.